Good morning. Today's daf in Suvos is daf Lamed Zayin. Lamed Vav Amud Aleph. We're at the bottom. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. We're almost done. We're almost done with the first sugya of the third parak of Suvos. It's been a very long sugya. And it has been a very long sugya because it tackled a very fundamental issue, and that is what occurs when there are two punishments in the hopper. If there's Tashlumim and there's Malkus, what occurs? So that is what the Gemara's been grappling with for over a week. All the way back on Lamed Aleph Lamed Beis, the Gemara asked the question, how come our Mishnah describes Tashlumim and the Mishnah in Malkus describes Malkus, and for seemingly what is the same act? And you know, in Lokan and Mishalman, you know you don't get both. So what happened? So we had Amoraim, a number of Amoraim, each citing a position. And finally, the Gemara arrived at, not a conclusion, but not a resolution, but closure on the discussion. And that occurred yesterday on Daf Lamed Vav. Really, actually, Lamed Hamed Beis. The bottom of Lamed Hamed Beis, so we saw Brisa. The Brisa had a lot of difficulties to it. We tackled some of the difficulties in the Brisa, and we're going to finish it up. And then, God willing, we're going to start the next Mishnah today on Lamed Vav Amud Beis. Let's just review the Brisa together so that we get our bearings and we're properly contextualized. Take a look at the Brisa on the bottom of Lamed Hamed Beis on Rabbanan. I'm just rereading the Brisa and then I'm going to pick it up right where we left off yesterday, which is the very bottom of Lamed Vav Amud Aleph. The Brisa on Lamed Hamed Beis is on Rabbanan Arayas v'Shnius Arayas and Lem Lo Knas v'Lo Pitui. Arayas and Shnius Arayas. So again, the Gemara really grappled with what that meant. But basically, women who are forbidden to you, so there's no Knas and there's no Pitui. Again, that's not our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that the whole chiddush of our Mishnah is that even though these women are forbidden to you, you still give them knas. You're not going to marry them, but you're still going to give them knas. Obviously, the author of the Brisa disagrees with the Mishnah. Yesterday, if you remember, we talked about to how much of a degree the Brisa disagrees with the Mishnah. That's subject to a debate we saw yesterday. But anyway, a mema'enis does not receive knas. Remember, the mema'enis is a woman who refused her husband. We explained yesterday how that happens, how that occurs. She doesn't get knas in pitui. That also, at face value, was a little bit difficult to understand. Is the Mishnah going like Reb Meir? Is the Mishnah not going like Reb Meir? Islandis ain la lo knas velo pitui. The islandis is not subject to neither knas or pitui, presumably because she's a katana. Hayotzes mishum shemra ain la lo knas velo pitui. And someone who is excused because of a shemra does not receive knas and pitui. We're going to discuss that later this morning, exactly what the brisa means by that case. Okay, that's the end of the brisa. Lamed vav amud alpha. Let's turn our attention. Habagaris ain latanis besulim. The Gemara here is quoting from a section of Brisa that we saw yesterday. Bogeris is not subject to Tanis Basulim. Bahamarav. The Gemara is bothered. Bogeris nosan la 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 rishon. Bogeris is given the first night. Do you remember the Mishnah Nida? The Gemara here is quoting the Mishnah Nida. The Mishnah Nida describes how certain women, based on the developmental stage, is allowed to be with their husband for not just the Bia Rishon, not just for the first act of Bia, but for an extended period of stay. A woman who is a Nida is forbidden to her husband. A woman who just simply is bleeding Dam Besulim is not forbidden to her husband. The tricky part, of course, is to know when is it no longer Dam Besulim, when is it Dam Nida, or at least when should you be concerned with Dam Nida. So Rav is of the opinion that when she's a Bogeres, and obviously she's a Basula, so you give her the first night. First night, Rashi says, Lebanim Rashi on Lamed Vav Amud Aleph, Ubo, Kama Be'ilos, Vatinan Kol Damim, Shal Osar Laila, B'dam Basulim. So for that first night, you assume that any blood that she has is Dam Basulim, and therefore you're not just limited to Bir Rishona, but you have the entirety of that first night of the marriage. Rashi points out, what do you see from that? Alma is laid down besulim bogeres. So it's pretty clear then from the brisa, not pretty clear, it's very clear that she has down besulim, because essentially what you're doing is you're saying that I know she's bleeding, but that's down besulim. So how can the brisa earlier say that a bogeres doesn't have tainus besulim when clearly there's an assumption that she has blood? So the Gemara answers, we're now on the top of Lamed Vav Amud Beis. So the Gemara says, 100%. No disagreement. If there is a claim that she didn't bleed, so that's a legitimate claim, and the husband therefore will go back all the way to the beginning of the Masechta, will act accordingly with what he says there was no blood, and now she has to have a counterclaim. But in other words, that's a perfectly legitimate claim. What the man was claiming is that there was no resistance. And as we learned all the way back in the beginning of the Masechta, that was Daf Tes in the Masechta. So we learned earlier that Pesach Pasuch is a legitimate claim. The husband could say, Pesach Pasuch Matzasi, he could say that he found no resistance. Remember, the Gemara earlier said, it's got to be talking about somebody obviously with experience, otherwise that's a very difficult claim to make, but he made such a claim. That's not true for a Bogeris. Rashi points out over here, again, look at the Rashi on top of Lamed Vav Amud Beis. So Rashi says, I was just going to skip a little bit. Vav Abisha En Yachol Avar Devar Befaneinu. Amrinan, sorry. Yeah. First skinny line of Rashi. Remember, Rashi's quoting a Gemara that we saw earlier. The Gemara earlier said that why is a man to believe the Pesach Pasuach? It's really based on his own sensation and his own perception. So there's a chazaka, there's a general presumption. He just made a wedding. And then he's going to ruin it all just because of a hunch that he has. So that chazaka gives him more certainty, if you will. Avam Yishek Bagra, but Rashi goes on to describe. But once she gets to the point of Bulgaris, Ein Rachmat Sar, Kibitchila, V'dom Lo Ki'ila Pesach Pasuach. However, part of the maturation of the woman, explains Rashi, is that she widens a bit, and therefore there shouldn't be as much resistance as when she was younger. And so therefore his claim of Pesach Pasuach is just, it can be explained anatomically, and therefore doesn't give him any type of legitimate claim whatsoever. Okay. Simcha Zomer Mishum Rabbi Meir Suma Ein Latanis Besulim. Moving along, someone who's blind doesn't have Tanis Besulim. So my time is a Simcha. So the Gemara says, now what does her blindness have anything to do with Tanis Besulim? The two seemingly have nothing to do with one another. So I'm Rabbi Zer Mnesha Nechbetes Agabe Karka. So Rabbi Zer gives an explanation. Well, because she's blind and she's going to stumble, she's going to fall. So she's going to fall awkwardly, and it's going to. In other words, there's a presumption that she probably at one point had an accident and she ruptured her dam besulim. So the Gemara says, "Kulo nami chavute mechvate." So the Gemara says, blind people are not the only one who fall. We're all capable, and not only capable, but you know, some of us are good at it. So the Gemara says we all fall down. So the Gemara says, "Kula rosa maros leiman." So the Gemara says, "Yeah, but there's a difference between the rest of the girl population and that of a stuma. If a girl falls and starts bleeding, so she's going to run to her mother. Zuin roev einamar lima. However, because of her condition, because she can't see, so therefore she'll fall, she'll bleed, but she won't know it, and therefore it creates a presumption that she does not have her dam besulim." We learn back in the Braisa that a woman who is excused from her husband, excused, that's really, that's a very polite way to say it. In other words, the husband made a claim that she had an affair prior to the marriage. And remember, the Torah describes if he's wrong, so he's going to be severely punished. If he's right, so the Gemara says, "Ayotz mishum shemra batskilahi." Well, if he's right, and she had a not just a premarital relations, but she had an affair during the kedushin, so bat skila, so she's subject to being that's adultery, skila. So I'm Rav Sheshes Hachi Kamar Mishiyatz Allah Shemra Bialdusa Ein La Lo Knas Velo Pitui. So the Gemara says no. What it means is as follows: if she went through the technical procedure of being a motzi shemra, she was excused because she had an affair. Obviously, there's nothing to talk about. Not knas, not pitui, and again, her issues in life are much more severe. We're talking about a woman who had a bad reputation. So because she had a bad reputation, so therefore it's presumed that she wasn't a besula, and therefore she's not going to receive the additional knas punitive fine. Amra papash mamina hishtar rea lo magbinam bay. So the Gemara says, okay, so as long as we're on the topic of bad reputation, let's say a document has a bad reputation. If the document has a bad reputation, so you can't collect with such a document. So the obvious question, hopefully everyone's wondering, What, how do you get such a bad reputation? Hey, chidami. Ilem denafakalala dishtar ziyufahu. So the Gemara says, rumors and allegations that, oh, you know that document? Oh, I can't believe you fell for that one. That's a forged document. Everyone knows it's a forged document. We've all been talking about it. So the Gabbai say, hachan denafakalala dizanai. So the Gemara says, okay. So again, we're not objectifying here, but regarding a woman, so what does that mean? Is that a parallel halacha that when it comes to a woman, oh, so rumors started circulating that she was that she had znos. The Amarava Yatzal Hashem Mizana Beir Ein Choshishin La. So the Gemara says, okay, but that's rumors, and Rava says, you know what you do with the rumors? You ignore them. So if you ignore the rumors when it comes to women, you ignore the rumors when it comes to document. So the Gemara says, what halachically presents a problem in terms of rumors? So the Gemara says that in order for her to get a deserved reputation of being promiscuous, so you need two witnesses to step forward and say, you know, she solicited us. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, and regarding a document, so the reason why the author of this document is presumed to have a status of being a forger is because two witnesses come forward and said, hey, he asked us to forge a document or to sign on a document that's a fictitious document. So the Gemara says, Bishlama asam shchichi prutzim. So the Gemara says, I'm not sure if really we can equate these two. As it relates to a woman, so unfortunately there are women who are promiscuous. And so witnesses step forward and say, you know, she solicited us. Yeah. The Gemara says, okay, that's a rumor. So the Gemara says, but here, the Gemara says, okay, just because he comes over to two people and asks them to forge a document, that means that every document he's going to write now is going to forge? So Achinami came into Kamahadar, Aziyufa, Emer, Ziyufa, Zayef, Kasav. So the Gemara says, yeah, yes, the Gemara says. A person comes over to two people and asks them to forge a document. So you know what's going to end up happening if he can't find somebody to sign on a false document? He'll do it himself. Meaning, it's enough of a red flag to indicate that he'll do whatever it takes in order to write up a forged document. So the Gemara says it is a fair comparison, and yes, the two cases can be equated. Okay, that brings us to the end of the first sugya of the perek, and here we go. Right, this is a contrasting Mishnah. The first Mishnah in the Masechta discussed the women who are entitled to Kenas. And again, the Chiddush of the first Mishnah is that even though the list of women that you cannot marry, but the Kenas payment is still intact. Why is the Kenas payment still intact? Because there is no other punishment. Meaning, there's no Malkus for whatever reason that we described in the last week. And also, there's no capital punishment. The only thing there is in the first Mishnah is Karis. And again, our Mishnah is of the opinion. Wow, it goes back many pages. And the first Mishnah is of the opinion that Karis is not going to superimpose himself on any corporal punishment. Not Malkus, not Mammon. Meaning, okay, that's the first Mishnah. Ve'elu she'in lan kenas. And as we start the second Mishnah, so you know what we're going to do now with the contrast. So these are a group of women who are not going to receive a kenas. Habal giyors v'ashuva v'ashivcha sheniftu v'shenizgayru v'nishtachru yeseru tzalaz b'noshol shanim yom echad. Anyone who went through a change, a significant change in life, above the age of 3. Assumption that we've had since the beginning of the Masechta is that God forbid, a woman is violated before the age of 3, her besulim grow back. If a woman is violated after the age of 3, her besulim does not grow back. That's an anatomical assumption that the Gemara makes throughout. So therefore, if a woman was either any one of these 3 states, either she was not Jewish, or she was held captive, or she was a shivcha. So in all 3 of these states, either willingly or not willingly, the presumption is that she had relations. So if her status changes after she turns 3, so that means that she's in a presumptive state of not being a besula, and therefore she's not entitled to knas. Okay, I'm going to say it again. She's still going to be receiving the compensatory damages. That doesn't change. The only thing we're discussing in this Mishnah is only her knas. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shvui Shidifte Tarei B'Kdushasa. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that if you have a captive who is released, so she's still in a pristine state, and it's assumed that she still has a basulim. This position of Rabbi Yehuda is a Das Yachid, meaning it's a Shitas Yachid. Most of what we've seen up until now, both in Yevamos and here in Ksuvos, is that that's not so. The way the Mishnah sets it up, also he's a Shitas Yachid. Okay. I'm sorry. Alpha Pisha Gadola. Haba Bito Abbas Bito Abbas Beno Abbas Ishto Abbas Bena Abbas Bita. If a man has relations with either his own daughter, or the daughter of his daughter, the daughter of his son, his granddaughter, the daughter of his wife, or the granddaughter of his wife, Ein Lahen Knas. So the Mishnah here says that there's no Knas. And why is there no Knas? Mipnei Shem is Chai B'Nafsho. Because she, he... Okay. Right, he is mischai b'nasho. In other words, he just violated a capital crime. Shemisasam bidei beistin v'chol ha-mischai b'nasho ein mishalem mamon. And anyone who is mischai b'nasho, anyone who does something which elicits a capital punishment, as we learned earlier, even if he doesn't receive the capital punishment, so we have the rule of kam le'b'derabim minei. Here's the Mishnah that spells it out. And by the way, if here's the Mishnah that spells it out, that's correct. What's coming up in the next 2 days of Daf Yomi is where the sources for Kamle B'Darabimine. We already know one of the sources. We saw already one of them. But one of the big discussions that's coming up in the Gemara is what the sources of Kamle B'Darabimine. But the Mishnah here spells it out. So the Mishnah already gives us a source for this rule of Kamle B'Darabimine. Comes from the Pasuk of Im Lo Yason. Again, we go back to the incident mentioned in the Chumash, Parshas Mishpatim, where two men are fighting, and a woman gets hit, and if she dies, there's no payment. Why? Because again, Kamle B'Darabimine, that's one of the sources that we see in terms of where we derive this halach of Kamle B'Darabimine. Interesting, by the way, notice that in this last case in the Mishnah, we did make a subtle change. Meaning throughout the Mishnayos, I mean, there's only two to speak about, but throughout the Mishnayos, we were really primarily talking about Knas. In this last case of the Mishnah, we're not just talking about Knas, we're talking about all Tashlumim. Because the whole idea of Kamle B'Darabimine is because he did something that will elicit a capital punishment, so therefore he's going to waive all financial obligation. So in this case, obviously it's a tragedy from the very beginning, but compounded with the fact now that she's not going to be receiving any payment because he's subject to capital punishment.
There's nothing new in this Mishnah, though.
From our perspective, there's nothing new because we went through a week of Gemara discussing all this. If you strip the Gemara away and you just looked at the Mishnayos, it's all new. Meaning the first Mishnah told us who does get a Knas, and this Mishnah is now telling us who doesn't get a Knas. Okay. I'm Rav Yochanan, Rav Yehuda, Rabbi Dos, I'm Rav Echad. Okay, this position of Rav Yehuda, very interesting, says the Gemara. Well, no, I said that. The Gemara didn't say that. But the Gemara says, let's put two shitas together. Let's put the shita of Rav Yehuda together with the shita of Rabbi Dosa. Meaning, they're such unique shitos, so we can look at them and we can kind of put them side by side. So, Amr Davar Echad. So Rabbi Yehuda Adamaran. So Rabbi Yehuda, good. So that we just learned the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda said that if a woman's taken into captivity, so she's still Bektushasa. She's still in a state of being a Basula, presumed state of being a Basula. Rabbi Dosa is a Tanya. Now, as far as Rabbi Dosa is concerned, so let's take a look at the following Braisa. Shvuya Ocheles Betruma, Div Rabbi Dosa. A Shvuya is still entitled to eat Truma, according to Rabbi Dosa. Amr Rabbi Dosa Vichimas Allah, Rabbi Halaz. What did the Arab do? Meaning, the Bryce is assuming that the captor is an Arab. So the Gemara says, what did he do? Me'achla bein dadeha pasla mina kahuna. He fooled around with her a little bit. But he didn't violate her. I mean, he molested her, he exploited her, but he didn't go any further than that. And that is a presumption made by Rabbi Dosa. So when God willing, she's going to get ransomed, then she'll get released. So she'll go back to eating truma. So Ama Rabba Dilma Lohi. So now the Gemara says, how can that be? Meaning, how are we going to? Rav Yehuda and Rav Dosa are similar, but they're not the same. Look, from Rav Yehuda's perspective, we're saying she still has her dam besulim. And you know why we're going to say that? Because think about the context of what we're talking about. We're talking about in the context of somebody just violated her. We don't want him to get away with what he did. So not only is he going to play the compensatory damages, but even if we're not 100% sure, but still we're going to make him pay kenas. So Rav Yehuda's position on Mishnah is we don't want him to get away with it. So from that perspective, we'll say she was a basula. You have to pay kenas. But over here, though, maybe not. Meaning we're talking about her ability to eat truma. To that degree, we're going to say that she's a basula, and we know she's a basula to eat truma. Remember, someone who's not entitled to eat truma and eats truma, it's a chiv misa b'dei shamayim, it's very severe. So Rav Yehuda may not agree with Rabbi Dosa. And the converse also. Maybe Rabbi Dosa would say that she could still eat truma, but we're talking about truma derabanan. Now, we didn't know that before, but the Gemara is now saying we're talking about truma derabanan. But here we're talking about imposing a Torah kenas. The Gemara says, no, maybe not. Maybe Rabbi Yosef wouldn't agree to Rabbi Yehuda. Amalei Abaye v'tam into Rabbi Yehuda ha'chashol yichot ha'nizkaru v'atanya. So the Gemara says, really, you think Rabbi Yehuda's shita is all about not letting the assailant get away with what he did? So the Gemara says, Tanya, we learned in a braisa. Rabbi Yehuda amar shvoish nishbeis areik b'tushasaf filabas esar shanim k'sivas ha'masayim. We have a braisa. The braisa says very clearly that according to Rabbi Yehuda, a shvu is entitled to a ksuv of 200. She's presumed to be a basula. So v'hasa mai shalo yechot eniskarika. Now there, who's the perpetrator? All you have is a husband. Okay, now we could say a number of things about the husband, but he's not a choteng. So the Gemara says, hasam nami damamim nevelo naspila. So the Gemara says, no. If we adjust her ksuva down to 100, so then maybe people won't marry her. So the Gemara says, again, there's a mitigating factor to consider in terms of why we're going to consider a basula. That's not Rav Yehuda saying, I know for sure she's a basula. It's just that if there's a mitigating consideration, like the perpetrator not getting away with his act, like people not wanting to marry her, so that for those halachas, we're going to say that she's a basula. But we're not saying objectively we know that she has a presumptive state of being a basula. The Gemara quotes another braisa. That if somebody ransoms the captive, so he's allowed to marry her. Lo yisaena. But if he testifies about her, he can't marry her. Rav Yehuda Omer ben kach ben kach lo yisaena. And Rav Yehuda says under both circumstances he's not allowed to marry her. So the Gemara says Hakuf Akasha. The Gemara says, well, now before we get to Rav Yehuda, which is obviously what we want to focus on, but let's go back just a moment. The Braisa says that if you ransom the Shvuya, you can marry her, the Tanakama, but if you testify about her, you can't. The Gemara says, that doesn't make sense. Amarta potes Shvuya yisaena v'hadat Tanameid ba lo yisaena mishum demeid ba lo yisaena. The Gemara says, I don't understand. You testified about her. Why can't you marry her? So halo kasha hachikama hapoda es hashvuya umeid ba yisaena. So the Gemara says that if you ransom her and you testify about her, so then you're allowed to marry her. But meid ba kedi. But if all you did is just testify about her, so lo yisaena. So then you're not allowed to marry her. And as Rashi points out over here, what's driving the Tanakama? Basically, you put your money where your mouth is. Meaning, if you're going to ransom her, it means that you have enough confidence to know that she was a basula. So if you're ready to put your money where your mouth is, so fine. That's great. So not you can marry her in a presumptive state that she was a basula. However, if all you're doing is testifying her, and by the way, it should be clear that we're talking about a kohen. Yeah.
So what's the difference? You testify by her, you can marry her, and if you testify by her, you can't.
No. If he ransoms her and then he testifies about her.
Right. Oh.
Correct. Then he's showing confidence that he knows that she was not violated. But if he's just testifying about her, and I mean testifying in court is a big deal, but I'm saying relative to our discussion, okay, fine. If I get to testify, I get a wife, okay. Now, come kashla Rav Yehuda. But the Gemara says, okay, now that we cleared up the Tanakama, but really what we want to focus is on Rav Yehuda. Because Rav Yehuda says, can't marry her. Cohen can't marry her. Now, wait a second. We've now seen two times over our Mishnah and a Braisa that describe how Rav Yehuda assumes that she stole Besula. So the first answer is, okay, you're right, the question's so strong. Meaning, correct. We're going to have to edit the Braisa a little bit, and the editing of the Braisa will be that according to Rav Yehuda, you can marry her. Even if he doesn't ransom her, even if he just testifies about her, you're allowed to marry her. And the reason is because Rav Yehuda, Lishita so, is of the opinion that she's in a presumptive state of being a Besula. So the Gemara says like this. Now, let's leave the Braisa as it is. Let's not adjust the Braisa, don't edit the Braisa. And Rav Yehuda was not espousing his own opinion. Right? This approach of the Gemara happens very often. And the Gemara says, Rav Yehuda in the Braisa, the unspoken sentence of Rav Yehuda is, look, if you want my Shita is, you can always marry her. But I know you don't agree with me. But at least give me this. But at least agree to me that under both circumstances, what difference does it make? You ransom her, you don't ransom her. I mean, according to you, you love Yisa'ena, you should marry her. And the Chacham's response back to Rav Yehuda is, no. We are of the opinion, generally speaking, a shvuya is not considered a basula. But if the man is ready, if the Kohen is ready to put money, and he's not just opining, but backing his opinion with money, so clearly he's of the opinion that she is a, she kept herself pristine, and so under those circumstances he can marry her. But but if all he's doing is testifying about her, there he's not actually putting any money behind his opinion. There it's just an opinion, and his opinion could be swayed by the fact that he looked at her, he was taken by her. And the Gemara says that could have been what's motivating him to say that she was a basula. The Gemara is still attacking Rav Yehuda, really pounding Rav Yehuda on his position, and again, probably having a lot to do with the fact that it's such a das yachid. It's really we haven't seen an opinion like this earlier in this Masechta. I don't remember Yavamos. But anyway, Sever Rav Yehuda, Big Dushas, Akaim of Atayin, the Gemara quotes the Braisa. Hagyarshin, Zgayar Veras Adam. A convert who converts and she sees blood. Rav Yehuda Omer Dayashaita. Rav Yehuda says, she is a nida from this point going forward. And Rabbi Yose Omer Hare Kachola Nashim Matame Meisleisum and Pekidah Pekidah. And Rabbi Yose says that she will be Matame for the last 24 hours or the last time she did an internal examination. Before we go on in this Braisa, let me just spend a moment explaining what's going on over here in the first half of the Braisa, and then we'll go on to the second half of the Braisa. It's really the second half of the Braisa that we're more interested in, just in terms of the Gemara, the flow of the Gemara. But just if we can create a little parentheses over here. It's not parentheses, it's in the Gemara. But just to explain what's happening. You got to go back to Masech Nida. You got to go back to the very first sugya of Masech Nida. A woman starts menstruating, so she's tummy. She's Tamei'ah, if I could speak more correctly. She's an Avatuma, right? Anything she touches, anything she sits down on. Okay. When does the Tumah begin? So the moment that the blood exits her uterus and goes into the canal. She is Tamea. And generally speaking, it's a flow. So that means then that when it goes into the canal, it's also going to exit her body. Okay, but that may not be absolute, meaning it could very well be that it paused in the canal before it actually exited the body. So therefore, the Mishnah in Nida, the first Mishnah in Nida, goes on to have the following discussion. We know that she's Tamea the moment the blood exits the body, but it could very well be that she was Tamea at a previous historical point. Should we be concerned with that, yes or no? Machlokas. It's Machlokas in the first Mishnah in Nida. Machlokas between Beisham and Beisilo. So the generally accepted viewpoint is, we don't fall like Beisham, who says Dayashaita. We don't fall like Basila, which is, you go back to the previous time that she had an internal examination, but rather the accepted viewpoint is the last 24 hours. Okay? It's what's called Tumma Me'es La'es. I know it requires us to remember now a long time ago, 3 years ago. But Tumah Me'eis Leis, we go back for 24 hours. And that is, the Gemara over there points out, that's a Tumah D'Rabbanan, it's Min HaTorah. The presumption is that she was in a Chazakah, she was in a presumptive state of being a Tahara. Her menstruating turns her presumptive state. So fundamentally, we should be agreeing with the opinion of Da'ishaita, which means that she is Tumah only from this point going forward. But as a stringency, the rabbis imposed a 24-hour retroactive Tumah. Okay, this is what's called Tumah Me'eis Leis. Okay, the Gemara over here describes now a woman who just went through conversion. Any bleeding prior to conversion halachically is disregarded. Meaning, obviously, physiologically she's the same, but halachically the blood that comes out of her prior to conversion has no tumah status whatsoever. And so now what we are dealing with in this first half of the Braisa is how do we regard her bleeding immediately after conversion? Rav Yehuda is of the opinion Da'ishaita. And if you take a look at Rashi, it is the most interesting Rashi in terms of why Rav Yehuda takes that position, which is that she's only Tameh from this point going forward, and she's not given the 24-hour rabbinic stringency of Me'eis Leis. Why not? See Rashi. First Rashi on Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph. He writes, V'lo gazra bat tumah Me'eis Leis. For her, there's no gzeira. On this one occasion, by the way, meaning from this point going forward, right, from this point going forward, she'll have it, but for this first occasion, she won't. Why not? Good. So Rashi, and you know, Rashi said what I said, but obviously you realize how ridiculous that statement is. I just repeated what Rashi said, right? The walls of the canal are holding back the blood, and that's why the rabbis imposed the 24-hour retroactive period. However, the blood of a non-Jew is just simply has no status. So Rashi says, okay, we're not going to go back 24 hours because her conversion, let's say, was 12 hours ago. Let's say that she's going to be Tamea from the point of her conversion. So the Gemara says, V'yatza miyad tumah l'mafreya d'rabban en hi, v'hecha d'ikla megzer me'eis le'eis shalem gazor, mi'pikida le'pikida, v'hecha d'lo gazor me'eis le'eis lo gazor mi'pikida le'pikida. So Rashi says like this, the rabbinic stringency of 24 hours, it's an all or nothing stringency. Meaning because she started bleeding 12 hours after conversion, so therefore she doesn't have a 24-hour history. Right? Fascinating. So she's a totally new entity. Right? I'm going to take back the term that was taken away from us. She's a born again. So the Yeah, she told me.
She's having a period of time in Tevila.
But let's say 12 hours after. 12 hours after. So Rashi explains that because she wasn't given the full 24 hours, she doesn't have 24 hours of history. And so because she doesn't have 24 hours, so this Gzeirah D'Rabbanan is all or nothing. So because she doesn't have 24 hours, so she doesn't have 12 hours. Okay, fascinating explanation of Rav Yehuda in terms of why she doesn't have it. And Rashi, and by the way, one more step in this. In other words, if she doesn't have Tumah Me'eis Leis, she also doesn't have Me'pikida L'Pikida, meaning we also don't go back to her previous internal examination. Okay, again, that was an interesting aside. Let's come back now to our Gemara. We want the second half of the Braisa for the flow of the Gemara. So, back to the Braisa, Rav Yossi Omer Harei Kachol Nashim Amitam Me'eis Leis Me'pikida L'Pikida. Okay, and Rav Yossi on this point disagrees. Utzricha L'Hamtin Gimel Chadash Div Rav Yehuda. And Rav Yehuda says she has to wait 3 months. Again, we've gone through this a lot in Yevamos. And in fact, in just a moment, we're going to quote a Gemara that we already saw back in Yevamos. To establish paternity, she has to wait 3 months. In order to know, here, by the way, it might not even be for establishment of paternity, but it's to know whether or not the baby she had was conceived before conversion or after conversion. Rabbi Yossi Mata Liarzalanasim Yadin, Rabbi Yossi allows her to get married right away. So, the Gemara is asking a question. Now, if you're thinking, understand, what was the question? Meaning, we're talking about Shvuya. The whole context of the Gemara is talking about the woman held captive. And we're asking a question now about a convert? Gemara is bothered by that precise point. Amar le giyor shvuya kamramis? What'd you just do? We're talking about Shvuyah, and you ask in court of Brice about Giyaris. Giyaris lo mintur nafsha, Shvuyah mintur nafsha. So the Gemara says, look, I could make a very basic difference between the two. When it comes to a Shvuyah, she's hoping and praying and keeping herself pristine that she's going to get out. But a Goya... Okay, in other words, she went through a conversion, which obviously meant that at one point in her life, she decided she's going to make a serious change in her life, but that doesn't mean that she was protective of herself all that whole time. So the Gemara says, okay, you're right. As far as that question is concerned, the Gemara says, scratch that. But the Gemara says, but according to the Braisa, Hagi or Zveha Shvuya Veha Shevcha Shiniftu Vishin Isgairu Vishin Ishtacharu Yisera Sabanos Gimashanim Yamechad Srichos Lahamtin Gimachadash and Div Rebbe Yehuda. Okay, now in this Braisa, should sound familiar. We did this back in Yavamos, although it's been some time ago. The Braisa says, a Giyaris and a Shvuya, both. And the truth of the matter is, there are three women mentioned over here, the Shifcha as well, but both of them have to wait, all three of them have to wait 3 months, according to Rav Yehuda. And Rav Yossi, and again, Rav Yossi's not worried about that. Later, we're going to ask the question, why isn't Rav Yossi worried about that? Seems to be it's a real concern that we have to wait 3 months in order to establish paternity. Stay tuned, we're going to explain Rav Yossi in just a moment. But meanwhile, Rav Yehuda is problematic. Rav Yehuda, the first half of today's daf, said time and again, a Shvuyah is assumed to be a Besula. She's assumed to be pristine. And meanwhile, we just saw a Braisa where Rav Yehuda says that when she comes out of her captivity, she has to wait 3 months. Why? It's a good question. In fact, it's such a good question. Ishtik. Okay, now he got him. Right, he didn't know what to answer. So Amalei Midishmi Allah. So he says back to him, okay, have you heard an answer to this? So I'm sorry, Midishmi Allah Baha. Amalei Hacham Rasheshes Shereushin Nivala. So the Gemara says, Rice is talking about a case where they saw that she had relations. Okay, if the Bryce is talking about where they saw she had relations, meaning Rav Yehuda normally is of the opinion that unless we know otherwise, we assume that she is still Bikdusha. But if they saw that she had relations, so okay, nothing to argue, nothing to contest. Fine. To which the Gemara then says, now I really don't understand the opinion of Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi says she can get married right away. So Amar Rav, because of Rav Yossi, Isha Mizana Mishameshes Bamoch, Shelotit Aber. So the Gemara says, look, if a woman's going to have some sort of adulterous relations, so she's going to use some sort of contraception, then she's not going to get pregnant. So Bishlam Agiyar is given the Daitali Guri Mintur Nafsha. So the Gemara says, slow down. In the case where a woman converts, I could totally understand that. And like her last days of being a non-Jew. Okay. She may have a couple of missteps, if you will, but she's going to use contraception. She knows she wants to convert. Shvuya nami de lo yada hecha mitam elam. And a woman who's held captive, so she too, again, we're explaining Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Yossi says, I can understand that as well. But shivcha nami de shame mipi mamra. So the Gemara says, and even a shivcha, meaning conversations taking place in the master's house, you know, it's time we're going to free her. Oh, really? She overhears the rumors that she's going to be freed, so she's going to make sure that she's not going to get pregnant. But Ella Yotzeh B'Shem V'Ayin Michael Amemar. But the Gemara says, but sometimes freedom comes spontaneously. So Keherifayin. So let's say, for example, the halacha is that if an eved or a shivcha's tooth or eye gets knocked out, and by the way, it could be any. It could be an extremity. The Gemara here is talking about the Torah's examples. So if a tooth or an eye knocked out, she's released. So there was no anticipation whatsoever. So over there, what do you say? That whenever she had relations, she used contraception, but she didn't even know she was going to be freed. So maybe the Gemara says Rav Yossi would agree in that case. Okay, meaning maybe it's not a question. Maybe Rav Yossi would just nod his head and say, you're right. In that circumstance, she would have to wait 3 months. But the Gemara says, but that's not true. Gemara says, a woman's violated or seduced. Debatable whether that belongs in this discussion, but a woman's violated. V'tanya, we learned in a brisa, anusa mafuta tzrichos amtin gemachadashim de Rav Yehuda. And anusa mafuta needs to wait 3 months according to Rav Yehuda. And Rav Yossi matir le'aris v'linasim yad. And meanwhile, Rav Yossi says that even a woman who's violated, she can remarry right away. She certainly didn't anticipate it. So how do you explain Rav Yossi there? Ela Amar Rabba Kasav Rav Yossi. The Gemara is going to give now a new understanding of Rav Yossi. It's not really new, but a modified understanding of Rav Yossi. Isha Mizana Metapech is Kadesh Lo Tetaber. So a woman, I was going to say contraception. It's not contraception. It's that a woman has the ability. Now again, I'm not giving a modern physiological and anatomical explanation. This is the Gemara's assumption that a woman, even after she has relations, can still prevent pregnancy from occurring. The way the Gemara describes it, although the Gemara doesn't give much of a description, she turns over. Again, I'm not here to explain the anatomy, but basically the Gemara says there is a way to prevent pregnancy even after the act of relations. And what's Rav Yehuda's counter argument to Rav Yossi? Rav Yehuda is certainly not going to disagree with the biology. So Rav Yehuda says, okay, but it's not foolproof, meaning that since we're not talking about contraception right now, we're talking about the zeros inside of her, and somehow she's able to clean herself out somehow. Rav Yehuda says that's not an automatic, and Rav Yehuda is concerned about pregnancy. Okay, let's. Interestingly enough, we go like Rav Yossi.
We are accepting it.
Yeah. Right.
Contraception.
Right. And it's even more. It's even a bigger chiddush than contraception. Meaning, even if she didn't use it, she could still somehow prevent pregnancy even afterwards. Okay. Okay. Continuing in the Gemara, Shenemar v'lo yason enosh enesh. And here we go. This is now the beginning of a discussion in the Gemara about Kamlei b'derabim minei. Our Mishnah spoke about it. Our Mishnah described a man who violated his daughter, his granddaughter. A really indelicate discussion, but it leads us to a fundamental discussion in halacha, and that is when a person does something which elicits two punishments. Now, I know this sounds very similar to a discussion we've had now for the past week, but keep in mind, most of what we've been discussing the past week was Mammon and Malchus. We're now talking about Mammon and Misa. And hopefully I'll be able to articulate later this morning, they may not be the same discussion. We are now learned in our Mishnah that if a person does an act which evokes two punishments, Misa and Mammon, so the Mammon gets waived. The Mishnah said, how do we know that? So the Gemara quotes the pasuk from Parshas Mishpatim. Again, just to review, describes two men fighting. A woman gets involved. She was pregnant. By accident, one of the blows went, instead of to the other man, it hits the woman. So if tragically she dies, then he's off the hook from having to pay. And then the Torah goes on to say, however, lo yason, but if she doesn't die, anoshi anesh. Then the man gets punished. And the assumption over there in the Torah is that he caused a miscarriage. The miscarriage is viewed, again, I'm not describing the status of the baby inside, that's a different discussion, but in terms of a financial asset, the baby is viewed as a, not the baby, the her fetus is viewed as an asset, as a financial asset, and so therefore he's going to have to pay. So it's pretty clear from the Torah that the payment is only there if there was no death. But if there was death, there's not going to be a payment. That's the source, that's the mission of Kamlei b'derabim minei. To which the Gemara asked the question, V'hameacha nafka me'asa nafka kederish aso. The Gemara says, why does the Mishnah quote that as a source? Why not quote the pasuk in Parshas Kiseitse, kederish aso, mishim rishachas atamechavim v'yatamechavim mishim shei rishayos. So, meanwhile, the last week of Gemara, haven't we been quoting the pasuk of Kedei Rishaso? The Gemara answers, Chada Memisa Mamon, Chada Bamakos Mamon. So, to which the Gemara says, two different discussions. Malchus and Mamon, that we learn out from Kedei Rishaso. Misa and Mamon, that we learn out from Ason Yiyah, from Parshas Mishpatim. Utsricha. And the Gemara says, and I cannot extrapolate one from the other. Because Misa Mamon, so what is there going to be? Ibn Neshama. Meaning, he's going to die. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, Yeshkan Onesh Chamor. Obviously, if I'm going to say, which is worse, money or your life, So obviously your life is worth more. It's a harsher, it's a more severe punishment. Right? And it's enough that he's got to lose his life. He's got to lose his life and pay money. So there, that's a clear decision of which one is more severe. Although, if I may, just for a moment, right? The pasuk says b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha v'chol me'odecha. Right? Remember the gemara is in, the gemara is at the end of brachos. The gemara over there says, you know, some people love their money more than their life, and that's why the Torah says v'chol me'odecha, that you have to love Hashem with all your money because some people love their money more than their life. So there is a thought out there in the gemara that people value their money more than their life, but I venture, the Gemara doesn't ask this question, and I don't really think it's a question. It's, you know, it's
it's
drush, and I think I don't think the Gemara over there is speaking to the vast majority of us. Okay, I'll admit, if I'm given the choice, I'd rather go with my money over my life. But okay, I'm not saying I'm representative of the majority, but I'm guessing that's, you know, the Gemara over there is not addressing the majority. Anyway. So, Ava Malkus Amaman, back to the Gemara, 3 lines from the bottom. But when it comes to Malkus Amaman, they're like Ibn Neshama, where there, it's there. What are your choices? It's money or it's Malkus? That's a tough choice. I mean, let's think about that. Okay, so, aim low. So I might have thought, look, there's no one which is an outstanding winner in terms of which one is more Chamor. So if all I had was a drasha of Misan Mamon, maybe when it comes to Malkus Mamon, maybe both. The Iyash mina Malkus Mamon Mishum Delo Chamer Yisura Ava Miso Mamon De Chamer Yisura Emalo. And the Gemara says we could have made a counter argument, and that is that when it comes to Malkus Mamon, the Aver wasn't that great, relatively speaking, of course. But the Aver wasn't that great. But when it comes to Miso Mamon, think about it. We're talking about a capital crime. Capital crime. Okay, so you know what? You did a capital crime. You got a lot to work on. Number one, you may have to lose your life. Number two, you're going to pay. Meaning, could have made a very easy argument that if all I had was a drasha, Malkus or Mamon, okay, we'll choose one of the two, not both. But Miso Mamon, harsh crime, harsh punishment. So the Gemara says, that's why I need both. So now let's go to the Shita of Rabbi Meir. Now we already spent some time with the Shita of Rabbi Meir, but the Gemara now is going to tie up the loose end, which is, according to Rabbi Meir, he's of the opinion that Loka Mishalim, that you do get Malkus and Tashlomim, which was one of the approaches that we had earlier this week in terms of how do you understand the Mishnah Ksuvos and the Mishnah in Malkus. The Mishnah has to go on like Rabbi Meir. So, if you hold like Rav Meir, what do you do with all these drushes that we just quoted? Tartil Amali, Chada b'misa v'mamon, v'chada b'misa u'makos. So the Gemara says, I do need two drushes, one for misa mamon and one for misa makos. Utsricha. Di'iash mina misa mamon mishum dechada begufa v'chada b'mamon elo abdinan. Look, if I just had a drusha for misa and mamon, here's the argument I would have made. Don't give him two punishments. Those are two separate punishments. One affecting his pocket, the other one affecting his life. Like, in other words, just keep it down to one. Ava b'miso makos da'ayde v'ayde b'gufa ima misa richtahi. But if the person is liable for something, for both misa and makos, maybe do both. Because anyway, look, we're going to terminate his life. So maybe if we do both, it's going to be a prolonged termination of his life. But maybe, again, it's an argument. But maybe we could have argued that we're going to do both. It's misa arichta. V'navidbe. V'iyash mina misa malkos etar to begufe lo avdinan. And when it comes to misa and malkos, so the Gemara says, look, I'm going to kill him and I'm going to whip him, meaning that's extraneous. Ava misa mamon dechad begufe vechad b'mamone. But when it comes to misa and mamon, one having to do with his body and the other having to do with his pocket, ema navidbe. So the Gemara says, I could have made an argument. You know what? Let's do both. Tzricha. Therefore, they're both necessary. Okay, let's do one more, and then we'll pause for today. V'lotichu kofer l'nefesh rotzeach lamale. Don't accept bribes. Bribe is not the best word, but in other words, somebody's on death row. Don't let him pay his way out. That's essentially what the Torah says. Lo tikhu kofer lenefesh rotzeach lamali. Damar rachmana lo tishko mamona mina v'tifteri mikatala. I gave away the answer, but the Gemara thought the question was going to be, isn't that a source for kamalei b'derabim mina? The Gemara's answer is no, it's not. It's a source to teach us that if somebody's on death row, When, and by the way, in halacha, death row is not that long, but if somebody's on death row, don't allow him to pay his way out of it. So, we have another pasuk also at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, which also speaks to the same basic idea. Gemara says basically same idea, but instead of him trying to pay his way out of the death penalty, he's trying to pay his way out of exile. And the Gemara says, and I need two psukim. The Gemara says, I need both, and I'll explain to you why I need both. Because when it comes to mezid, so there, he killed someone with intent. He's on death row. Of course, don't let him pay his way out. But if he killed someone inadvertently, it was an accident. Again, an accident that he should have been more careful about. But it was an accident. So I might have thought, okay, exile, but you know what? He wants to pay? Okay, let him pay his way out of that. So and the Gemara says, and I could have made a counter argument. Look, when it comes to exile, okay, he's going to still live, so don't let him pay his way out. But when it comes to killing him, maybe, you know what? You know, let's save another life. Meaning we're going to take another life away. Let him pay his way out of it. That's why I need the pasuk specifically over there as well. Okay, we'll pause over here. Okay, we're almost caught up. I like that. We finished the discussion of the first sugya, explaining some of the trickier points of the braisa that we saw on Lamed Hamid Beis. Started the new Mishnah on Lamed Vav Amud Beis, the women who are not entitled to Kenas. The Mishnah here is the source of the rule of Kam Leib D'Rabbi Mineh. Today's Gemara, tomorrow's Gemara, first half of tomorrow's Gemara, is discussing the sources of where do we know Kam Leib D'Rabbi Mineh. And as we learned today, there basically are two separate halachas, one of Misa and Mamon and the other of Makos and Mamon. And as the Gemara pointed out, it's not the same patur, it's not the same exemption. And we'll talk more about that tomorrow as well.